I can't tell you how many times I've been told to just drink more water when I have a pounding headache, or when my muscles are sore after an intense Pilates class, or when I'm feeling tired on a Monday morning. But the secret to quenching your thirst isn't more water, it's water and electrolytes. And no, not the sugary sports drinks. I'm talking about Element, a sugar-free electrolyte drink mix that I add to my water bottle for hydration on the go. With delicious flavors like citrus salt, raspberry salt, and mango chili, drinking water is no longer boring, it's beneficial. Right now, Element is offering a free sample pack with any purchase. That's 8 single-serving packets, a great way to find your favorite flavor. Get yours at drinkelement.com/girlboss. That's drinkelement.com/girlboss. Hello and welcome back to Girl Boss Radio. I'm your host, Avery, and I'm the founder and CEO of Bloom, an HR and DEI consulting firm, and I am a big believer that work should work for all of us. As always, I'm joined with Liz, Girl Boss's general manager, and Victoria, Girl Boss's senior writer, who are both co-producers of Girl Boss Radio. Today, I'm really excited for this conversation because it is all about trad wives. And for anyone that has been swooning over Nara Smith's content, you know exactly what I'm talking about. But before we get into it, Victoria, please introduce our fabulous guest today.
Absolutely. We couldn't think of someone more perfect to come on as an expert for this topic, this spicy topic, I might add. So Carol Claire Burke is an associate editor at Katie Couric Media, but she spends her free time sharing feminist and media literacy critiques on TikTok. And her content about tradwives has gained millions of views. But it was actually Liz who came across her content and brought her to us.
Yeah, Carol makes these great, insightful videos, mostly from her car, that dissect the meaning and the greater context and cultural criticism behind videos of Nara Smith, Emily Mariko, Ballerina Farm, the list goes on. And after watching a few of those TikToks, I just thought, give this person a podcast. Let's start with Girl Boss Radio. Let's at least have her on. It's a very trending topic. It's very fresh. I don't think anyone's been minted as the go-to de facto expert on all things tradwives, but I think Caro is front runner in that race for that title for sure.
Absolutely. And I remember I had come across her content on numerous occasions because she talks a lot about the intersections of feminism and gender and capitalism and consumerism with influencer culture. So it was a really, really juicy conversation. I loved it.
Something that Caro does really well is really highlight the difference between a trad wife and a trad wife influencer. Because really, a trad wife is someone who works in the home, but a trad wife influencer, that is her brand. They are working and creating and making videos, and they probably have an accountant and an editor and an assistant or several. There's a machine behind this artifice of making bread or wearing linen aprons or whatever it may be. And I think that's the real missing link. And I think when she said that, it was like, oh yeah, of course, these people, that is their job. They are actually employed. They are their own boss, sure, but they're beholden to algorithms, they're beholden to apps, they're beholden to their audience. And something else that I really loved that Caro had brought up in the age of influencerness that we've reached, an influencer to be relevant needs to have an equal amount of people who love them and an amount of people who loathe them. And you want those two people to constantly be battling in the comments and defending and disparaging in equal measure. That's what keeps their name at the forefront. That's what keeps the brand deals rolling in. That's really what keeps their following going up. And that's the reality. And I think Nara Smith knows this. I started watching Nara Smith when she maybe still had like 200,000 followers on TikTok, and now she has millions. And her earlier content was still extremely aspirational, very beautiful, very well shot. But it was recipes I could make. It was like a baked chicken with feta. Like, I was like, okay, I could make that. Maybe not 3 times a day, every day, but I could make that. But now I think she's kind of in on the joke a little bit, and she kind of does this thing like, well, my kids wanted a PB&J, so I got started on fresh bread right away. And you can almost tell in her voice that she's doing this to extend that discourse and to get people to say stuff like, oh, well, and then 3 hours later, her kids finally had a PB&J. She's totally, totally engaging with the discourse.
Yeah, there's like an element of trolling that's coming from Nara, which I appreciate and I love, because it shows that she's not only listening to the people that love her, but she's paying close attention to the people that aren't necessarily huge fans of hers or people that are critiquing her and what she stands for.
Another tradwife influencer who you might think isn't a tradwife influencer is actually Emily Mariko. And I've been a fan and follower of her since probably 2020 or 2021 when her deconstructed spicy salmon rice bowl went viral, which I still make today. And going back to what Liz said about you need to have a balance of hatred and love, I will never forget when she made like a watery pumpkin pie and like people still talk about it. I see her in the comments saying like, we want an apology for that watery pumpkin pie. Like, where's your apology? Her recipes are, I would say, really attainable even today, but it slowly morphed once she was sharing about her wedding and realizing how wealthy she truly is. I feel like it's becoming more and more obvious what exactly she's selling. And so now I'm trying to be more of a critical viewer. One thing I want to add, her farmer's market hauls too. She'd come home every Sunday. And I one time got sucked into a $6 heirloom tomato at the farmer's market, and I've never forgiven myself. So I can't imagine having the type of money that she does to go to the farmer's market to get her full grocery haul every week.
And you say recipes, which is really interesting. She doesn't actually provide recipes. She just makes food. She doesn't say how many quantities. She doesn't give you instructions. Nara Smith doesn't either, probably because they're all gatekeeping it for their eventual cookbook, their inevitable cookbook of several cookbooks. And Carol, one of her videos, talked about this. They're not actually providing a service because they're not teaching you how to make sourdough. They're not teaching you how to make the salmon bowl. You kind of have to infer that from their video. And they're not engaging in the comments. Like Emery Mariko famously does not reply to comments. And so they're not actually adding value necessarily. They're just there for entertainment and aspiration. And if anything, they're siphoning value out of their audience via selling them things, right? Which is kind of the ultimate criticism of tradwives, is that they are another mechanism by which you should aspire to buy this toaster or buy the exact same Le Creuset that Emily Mariko has so you can be a little bit more like her.
And that is the problem with tradwife influencer culture. It puts a question mark around the, not the ethics, but the intention. What are you actually trying to do here? And what I loved about my conversation with Caro is that she really made me think about what is it that we are consuming when we are engaging with their content and what's the impact of consuming it. For me, I find Nara Smith's content to be really beautiful and relaxing and interesting to watch. I don't look at it with a critical lens, really, because I would never do that. I don't feel any shame when I don't create a peanut butter and jelly sandwich from scratch for my children, because I don't have children. I don't have a husband. And generally speaking, there's no one here in my house that cares about whether I eat pizza like a rat over my sink. There's no judgment.
The way it should be.
Exactly. I think that the problem is they are performing the type of domestic labor that most women don't have the time or the privilege to engage in. And what they aren't performing for us on their TikTok or Instagram or their social media channels is the type of domestic labor that we know that a lot of women have to do, like cleaning our toilets and scrubbing our floor, washing the dishes. These are not things that we're seeing happening. I think that this is where we put into question like the intention around it, and then specifically the impact that it's having on women.
I think it's also putting an outsized value on something like that. They make sourdough bread and they go to the farmer's market, and that actually pays them. That pays them handsomely. Emily Mariko is probably making more money as a TikTok creator than she ever did in her job at Meta. But the thing is, if regular women copied that behavior and did those exact same things and made the exact same food, they would not be financially rewarded for doing so. So it sets up this completely unfair paradigm where they're doing domestic labor, but benefiting in a capitalist system, but the people that are consuming that content, they're not benefiting, they're losing out, because at the very worst case scenario, they could actually be going into debt trying to mimic these lifestyles and buying the fancy appliances or overspending on groceries just so they could be a little bit more like them, but they're not being financially compensated for that.
What I like about Caro is that she always references the fact that she has no ill will towards any of these influencers. She talks about the relationship that we have with them as a symbiotic relationship. We are giving and taking from one another, of course. And this is a shared experience. And I think that it is totally okay to critique perhaps what trad wife influencers stand for and all the systems in which they continue to perpetuate that harm women, whilst also acknowledging that this can be beautiful content and aspirational and provide joy and a form of escape from some of the content that we're definitely on the receiving end of that doesn't feel as heartwarming and joyful and lovely and beautiful right now.
There's a really fine line, I think, between cultural criticism and snark. And of course, snark is so frowned upon. It's a guilty pleasure. It's something that we do anonymously in like some back channels of Reddit. And it's also probably a sign that you've made it as an influencer. If people are snarking about you, congrats, you're a big deal. But I think it's okay to still be able to critically look at content and be like, what is this person talking about? What is the meaning behind this video? What is it trying to sell me, either directly or indirectly, without necessarily being labeled as like a low-life snarker?
Totally. And I think that with the lack or absence of media literacy for a lot of us. And I mean, ultimately, the role of an influencer is relatively new in the context of like TikTok and social media. We've had the Tupperware of influencers in the past.
I saw a tweet that today's influencers are just Avon ladies.
Yes. Exactly. So I know that there's been that type of archetype that has existed in the past for sure, but not at this scale, not like this. Our brain can't process this is an ad. This isn't real. This person is performing this.
I'm kind of excited to get to a place where we're renegotiating our passive consumption of influencer content and trying to define our relationship with it. And people like Caro, I think, are a necessary byproduct of the influencer economy that exists in this tertiary space as almost like quality assurance. They're kind of the conscience of the influencer industry.
I know for myself, and I see a lot of other women in the comments of Emily and Nara's videos, their life looks so idealistic. It's like, okay, maybe I too want to opt out of the career race and just spend my days wearing matching aloe sweatsuits and bake sourdough bread all day. But I think it's important to note too that obviously tradwives are in an incredibly privileged position and you think, oh, they're stepping out of this capitalist grind, but they're not. They're actively participating in it because they are selling us something. And we actually did poll our Girl Boss Daily, our newsletter readers, asking tradwives and stay-at-home girlfriends the realities of their lives. And a few of them said, you know what? It's not all that's cracked up to be. I'm actually really bored, or I feel like I've lost my purpose. The reality is these lives just don't exist. The Emily and the Naras of the world, they're cosplaying domestic labor to us, which is something to be mindful of. So on that note, let's get into the episode.
Caro, welcome to Girl Boss Radio. I am very excited to have this conversation with you. I think for the first time, we're going to be diving into one of my latest obsessions on TikTok.
Wow. Thank you for having me. I'm so thrilled to have this conversation with you. It is my Roman Empire at this point. So I'm so excited to discuss it.
Yeah. And I had a lot of fun doing research for this conversation because I got to engage in very beautiful content. But then also I spent 2 hours just listening to all of your hot takes about tradwives and feminism and consumerism and capitalism. So it was just an absolute joy. It's all my favorite things just combined into one. So I think that the best place to start this conversation would be to ask, who are Ballerina Farm and Nara Smith and what do they have in common? Additionally, could you explain the tradwife viral trend on TikTok and what it entails for those who may not be familiar with it?
Yeah, so I think the first thing that I could say just to explain it is that the phrase tradwife is something that's been around for a long time. It's short for traditional wife. It is a woman who espouses traditional values, stays home, likes to be a homemaker, enjoys prioritizing domestic labor, all of the standard 1950s housemaker things that we know so well. Ballerina Farm and Nara Smith are two influencers. Ballerina Farm is an account run by a woman named Hannah Neelman. She lives in Utah. She is a Mormon. She has 8 children. And if you look at her accounts on Instagram or on TikTok, what you see is basically the most bucolic farm life that you can possibly imagine. It's highly curated reels of this beautiful woman with her 8 children moving around her. She's making sourdough bowls from scratch. And it's just highly, highly curated, beautiful content. Nara Smith is very different. She's a biracial model. She's married to another model, a man named Lucky Blue Smith, and they have 2 children with 1 on the way. And she shares cooking videos. So she likes to talk about these really, really over-the-top homemade creations that she does, like homemade ice cream and a homemade PB&J with even the jam from scratch. And so they're, in many ways, very different types of content for slightly different types of audiences. I would say that Nara Smith has much more of an elevated aspirational appeal, whereas the aspiration on Ballerina Farm is much more abstract. It's like the aspiration of pleasure and relaxation and beauty. But what these both women have in common is that they are both, I think, tradwife influencers. So they are people who tend to perform the tasks of domestic labor that make housemaking and homemaking look so appealing in the ways that traditional advertising used to do 50 years ago.
Sorry, this is like some tea, but with Ballerina Farm, isn't she the descendant of a very wealthy family as well?
So this is where it always gets so interesting. There is always money somewhere. She does come from a family that's relatively successful. but it's her husband who is of the JetBlue lineage. So her husband comes from major airline money.
Wow.
And Nara Smith also has married a highly successful model. She's successful herself. It takes a lot of money to curate such simple beauty.
I'm actually really curious. How did you get into this type of cultural criticism?
Oh, it has been such a left turn in my life. So I've been in media for 10 years. I've always been really, really fascinated, a big learner on feminist critiques and critiques of late stage capitalism. So I've always been a student of it. And then I got my master's in fine arts and I specialized in a feminist critique of certain literature. And then, you know, it's funny, I always avoided TikTok. And one day, just for fun, randomly, I posted a satirical quick video about how I had found myself becoming obsessed with Ballerina Farm. And this is a true story. I was on Zillow looking at these houses I couldn't afford. And I was adding these really bizarre specifications like honeycomb oven, 17th century beams. And I was like, why do I randomly want that? And it hit me, oh my God, I've been watching that freaking account. I've been obsessed with that account. And now I want a wood stove. And so I just shared a really quick video about it. And then I started to get all these comments. And so I would get these comments where I would just kind of think, oh, that's a really interesting thought that this person has. And so I basically just started sharing videos in response to the comments that people were making on my page. And one comment in particular that kept coming up was, why are we tearing down other women? Why are we even making fun of them? This poor woman is trying to live her life. And that's kind of where I found my footing, where I started talking about like the difference between brands and individuals, what it means to be curating an influencer account. And so a lot of my media knowledge as someone who's worked in the media industry for a long time came into play there. And it just took off from there.
Why do you think the tradwife content has taken off so much? And why are people so obsessed with watching it?
So I think that if you were to ask maybe someone at one of the publications who has written a piece about this, I think they would say, you know, we're obsessed with beautiful things. We're obsessed with influencers. And this is a trend. My personal read on this is that the tradwife universe is so addicting to us and so compelling because our lives are so much more similar to their lives than we realize. I think that we are at a time period, especially in American history, where people are so up against the wall. We don't have access to good childcare support. We don't have a social safety net. We have such long hours, both for blue and white collar work. And I think that number one, that makes women in particular feel really, really sensitive and fascinated and triggered by this content of women just taking care of their children and making food at their leisure because it's something we don't have. And then I would also just say secondarily, you know, like we're a country that is founded on fundamentalist Christian rule. We are a country with very, very traditional values in a lot of senses. And so I think that the tradwife influencer almost reflects something at us that we are really uncomfortable with and that is closer to us than we feel comfortable with, as opposed to the fact that some people are arguing that it's far away and we don't want it to grow. Like, I think it's very close. And that's why we feel so triggered by it.
Yeah. And we're going to get into the deeper meaning, but I think that it's important for us to actually define the difference between a trad wife and a trad wife influencer. Can you share a little bit more on that?
Yes, absolutely. So a tradwife is, for all intents and purposes, a conservative stay-at-home mom. I think it's really simple. A lot of people can be tradwives. They're women who take care of the domestic labor in a home. They take care of their children while their partners work. They have conservative beliefs. It's as simple as that. It's often white women. It's like a very white ideology, but I don't think it's limited to that. Tradwife influencers are people who perform an image of domestic labor and share it online to make money. They monetize it. So the performance of the labor is more important than the labor itself. The tradwife influencers that we are talking about, none of them are doing actual domestic labor all day long. None of them are keeping their homes perfectly clean. None of them are scrubbing their toilets. And we know that because we know the work that goes into recording and doing these videos. These videos take hours and hours and hours to actually just accomplish. So there is actually no way that they're doing all the domestic labor that a normal a stay-at-home mom or a trad wife would be doing. What they're doing is they're performing, and they're doing that in order to get you to buy through an affiliate deal or to get a brand sponsorship. And so it is all about this cosplay that then makes them a lot of money and that you then buy the product from them.
When we consume trad wife content, what are we actually consuming?
Oh, it's a great question. I mean, this is where the lights flicker in the room and it's like, dun, dun, dun. What are we consuming? We're consuming a false image of an America that never existed. we are consuming this nostalgia that was first packaged to us over 50 years ago when men in advertising rooms decided that they wanted to sell more refrigerators and microwaves. We are selling an image of a homemaker that is defined by consumerism. These women are selling things all the time. If you look at their links, they have big Amazon marketplaces where you can get everything from their kitchen. When you look at their brand deals with Dolce & Gabbana, when you look at the Ballerina Farm website where you can get a sourdough starter kit for $100, you are buying an advertisement. You are consuming an advertisement the same way that if you had opened Time magazine in 1958, you would have seen a beautiful woman in a beautiful apron with a gorgeous vacuum cleaner. And so that has always been based in deeply patriarchal ideals, deeply sexist ideals. And now it is just the latest spin on it. It's just the new version of it with social media. And it's that much more compelling because advertisements are that much more intimate now. The interiority is totally collapsed. You feel like you're in their house. You become really enamored with them. You feel like they're your friend. And so you're in a position where you're really, really easy to be sold things.
If you're feeling stuck in your job or like you've lost your career mojo and your work doesn't satisfy you like it once did, Girl Boss is here to help. Our brand new course, Spark Your Career Renaissance, is your career playbook for going from stuck to success. Girl Boss resident columnist and career coach Tori Lazar is not here to tell you to quit your job or ask for a raise. You're going to go deeper, way deeper, to unlock your true source of joy and ambition. Click the link in the show notes to join. You're listening to My Chat with Caro. Next up, I ask her if following a tradwife influencer is inherently anti-feminist. Her answer might surprise you. Let's get back into it. Why are people so outraged?
Oh, I mean, that's every bit as complicated as the foundation. I think first and foremost, there's outrage on either side. In order for anything on social media to really succeed, you need a dialogue. So you can't just have people love you and you can't just have people hate you. You have to have people loving and hating you in the comments. That's how things go viral. If you look at any of these influencers, they are people who drive engagement. They drive conversation. And so you look at Ballerina Farm, you have a lot of women who think that this is exactly what life should look like. And so they're loving her. And then you have a lot of women who are thinking, why am I being sold a really regressive form of America? And then I think you get into another type of argument, which is whether or not these women are tradwives to begin with, whether they are tradwife influencers, whether that term is derogatory. I say it with total moral neutrality. I think that's the only way you can talk about these things. I don't know these women. I don't think they're bad people. I think they can be tapping into things they might not even be aware of. But I think you have a lot of defensiveness, especially around when you have like a biracial woman like Nara Smith. Very fairly, a lot of people are pointing out that it is very different for a person of color to be performing these tasks when historically they haven't been able to take care of their families. They've had to take care of other families. A lot of the anger and frustration is just about either thinking that you're being sold a reality that you don't want, or you wish you could have that reality. And then the other bubble of anger and frustration is, this person is a tradwife. No, they're not. And then you have that more meta argument taking place at the same time.
And I think it's important to acknowledge the Nara Smith piece, because I think that there's been conversation around whether calling Nara Smith a tradwife or not is racist. For me personally, as a Black woman, I don't think that critiquing Nara Smith or any individual is inherently racist. It really just depends on what the criticism is. Criticism should be based on actions, behaviors, and ideas rather than immutable characteristics such as race. And that's not what people are critiquing about Nara Smith's content. Engaging in critique is a fundamental aspect of the discourse that is happening and intellectual exchange. It's important and necessary for our growth. And one creator that I actually wanted to call out, Professor Neil.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. Yes. He did a great video about this.
And he just said that if we're going to talk about race or the intersection of race with a tradwife discourse, it's important for us to maybe label this as a brand refresh and call it neo-trad if we want to hold space for people that haven't historically been represented in the tradwife archetype to be involved and assumed in it. Although for me, I think it's important that we see Black women engaging in Black joy, engaging in leisure, engaging in an abundance of really beautiful things I don't think that that's what people are critiquing when it comes to Nara Smith. But also one thing that I wanted to share too, through the context of like race, is that we have had women, specifically Black women, performing this type of work for millennia. And I think that what's not being acknowledged is the role of enslaved people in supporting domestic work for hundreds of years without payment against, of course, their own free will. It's a very interesting and a sensitive topic to discuss when it comes to Nara Smith and the intersection of race. But I think that for the purpose of this conversation, we're talking about the archetype of a trad wife.
My hope was that we would get to a point where people are actually looking at their own lives and thinking like, holy crap, there is so much about my own life that is impacted by the structures that define a trad wife. And I think, unfortunately, we went in the opposite direction of really trying to other these people and trying to prove all the ways in which we are not like them. And there's only a small group of them. And the only thing we have to worry about is whether they'll gain speed in the future. And to me, I feel the opposite way really strongly. I feel like there is so much nuance to this conversation. A person does not have to be malevolent to be tapping into a lot of the foundational aspects of being a trad wife or trad wife influencer. When you're talking about influencers, there are so many incentives at play. I totally understand that these women make a good life for themselves and make money. And there are so many other problematic aspects of other types of influencing. There's so much nuance that has to exist in this conversation about like, are you a woman who took your husband's last name? That is a form of tradwifery. There are so many layers to this and so many notches. And I hope that we can eventually get to a point where we view it as just one of many layers through which to look at the world that we're all moving through, we're all engaging with, as opposed to trying to other an influencer and decide if you love them or hate them, and you can only be in one of those camps.
Yeah, I completely agree. And it's important to recognize that multiple truths can coexist.
Absolutely.
While critiques may be valid, Nara Smith and another trad wife that is biracial or Black or racialized can still serve as a source of inspiration for Black people. And her accomplishments, resilience, and contributions should be celebrated within the context of her racial identity without exempting her from criticism based solely on that identity. So what's a checklist that we can use to spot a trad wife online? And I'm asking you this because you did a piece of content on your TikTok where you actually were like, okay, is this person a trad wife? Check, 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 check. And I would love for you to share that with our listeners.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll just give the caveat that my checklist might be different than others. This is just mine. Number one, are they espousing traditional values? Traditional values being that a woman's place is in the home, that a woman's most important job is performing domestic labor and being a mother. That's a really easy one. Number two, are they espousing fundamentalist Christian values? So that can have an overlay with traditional values. Like, do they talk about God? Are they going to church? You might see that they have their management email in the bio. That is an indication that their page has been set up for brands to like what they're doing. You might see that a link leads you to an Amazon affiliate page or a Walmart affiliate page or their own personal website. That will let you know that they're selling you something. I guess the other one I would say is perfectionism at the base of their performance. That's pretty important. So Nara Smith, absolutely. Ballerina Farm, absolutely. Kate Middleton, absolutely. A lot of women who buy into this or like who fall under this umbrella of the traditional wife lifestyle, perfectionism is absolutely key to that. Doing everything effortlessly, not having trouble taking care of their children, not looking stressed, enjoying their life, and just being centered in the home.
It brings up a lot of shame for me as an individual that engages with the content. How does the glorification of domestic labor influence women's ambition?
It's so interesting because I think just to nod to your point, the reason why influencers are so successful is because it's a form of advertising that I don't think our brains are capable of processing quickly enough. I think that we buy a product before we even realize what has happened. It's such a collapse of interiority. You feel like they're a friend. Your brain doesn't know what to do with it. You're not processing it as an ad. You're processing it as a recommendation from a good friend. When you think about that, most young women are raised in a world where gender norms are the air you breathe. I've talked about this before, that I'm in a marriage that I would define to be very progressive and very equitable. And yet I do probably three times as much domestic labor as my husband. And I don't think that this is because he avoids it. I don't think that this is because I like it. I think that it's because it is embedded in me in a way that I can't fully get out. I think that when I see a sink and it's filled with dishes, I think it itches at me in a way that it doesn't itch at my husband. And I think that that is so foundational to not just how our country works, but how so much of our world works at this point, that gender roles and the isolation and concentration of women in the position of housework and homework and child labor is so embedded in us that you don't even notice all of the ways that you are being signaled and molded as you grow up. And so then you get to adulthood and maybe you like cleaning and it relaxes you. Maybe you hate it. But I think glorification is a really interesting word. And I would almost use something like subliminal. I don't even know if it's something that we are fully consciously aware of. I think it's like the air we breathe.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, the United Nations reported that globally, women perform approximately almost 3 times the amount of unpaid care and domestic work than men do.
Yeah, I believe it.
And this is a global phenomenon. So this isn't necessarily just like North American specific. I think that there's definitely been a careful indoctrination of us over millennia to be engaging in that work and more likely to do it. So I know Emily Mariko went to Columbia and worked at Meta, but now chooses to stay home and cook and put out a line of tote bags. What does this say about the state of women's corporate ambition when we're seeing this type of shift?
Yes, I must add that the tote bags are $120 and are cotton, just so everyone understands that. Yeah, this is absolutely fascinating. I think that Emily Mariko is probably the most interesting influencer in this space because she reflects so much of what is taking place in America. And because she, more so than Nara Smith or Ballerina Farm, I think is so close to the audience. She's so similar to you because of her professional background, because of the way that her videos work. She's very relatable. And so I think that what her background indicates to us is that you can have some of the highest levels of education. You can have doors open to you that aren't open to almost anyone else in the world. And you can still end up having better opportunities in the home than you would out in a corporate environment. And I also think it speaks to how gendered every industry is. We talk a lot about how the influencer industry is obviously gendered and domestic labor is gendered. And so that impacts our conversations. What we don't talk about as much is that the tech industry is gendered. Private equity is gendered. The political environment that we have right now is gendered. And so what we have are women who are high caliber, come from some of the best educational backgrounds, go to some of the most prestigious, for better or for worse, corporations to work at. And they're working in a gendered industry that is not going to give them potentially the same opportunities for financial success, for lifestyle success that they might find by cosplaying domestic labor. So it's kind of this great irony that Emily Mariko basically cosplays domestic labor, and she has probably made more money and created a better lifestyle for herself than whatever job she had at Meta.
Well, and it's so interesting because in both cases, the same person wins. It's still serving the same person.
Thank you for saying that. It's serving the same person. And what I would add to that is that this gets into the really, really sticky conversation, which is about individual success versus collective success. Because for any woman who leaves the tech industry for a better lifestyle for herself, for a better lifestyle for her children, I would never fault her for that. But when you have women who keep moving out of these male-dominated spaces, you are never going to change the system, and you are ensuring that another woman down the line will face the same difficulties that you face and will also want to exit. And so especially in politics and finance and tech, when we have women continuing to exit because they haven't found a good environment, then you have the system basically reinforcing itself ad nauseum. And that is the problem. I think people have this false understanding that how is it any more empowering to go work for Mark Zuckerberg when you can go work for yourself? And I understand the point in that, but I would just add, you're not working for yourself when you become an influencer. You are still working for brands, and you are also still working for these social media networks. You are working for the algorithm, and these white men are still benefiting. And so there is no world in which you become an entrepreneur when you become an influencer. You are still working at the mercy of Fortune 500 CEOs who decide how you look and how you should operate. And that's why these women are succeeding.
Yeah, absolutely. Choose your hard. Which hard do you want, right?
It's so true.
One of the reasons why I'm rooting for Nara Smith, regardless of my own personal views on what she may be promoting, is that she's biracial. She's Black. She's not white. And we need to see women like her represented in what our lives could look like. But only allowing one of us through the crack every now and then isn't collective liberation. it's just only reinforcing the broader patriarchal system that only allows some of us to thrive.
Yeah. And I think too, I have told many people, if you love Nara Smith, if you love Ballerina Farm, that's great. My goal is never to tell people you have to unfollow someone. If you're looking for someone who isn't remotely problematic in some way under this system, you're not going to find anyone because we're all impacted by the systems that we live under. I'm sure that I have countless aspects of my own personality that are founded or driven by ideologies that I'm not proud of or don't want to be associated with. And I also think the business of influence is complicated. And so my thought is always like, if you love Nara Smith, that's awesome. The only thing I'm ever asking people to do is understand when you're being sold something. Because once that happens, you can consent to it. So that's another point I would make. If you love a cutting board that she's using, buy the cutting board. Just think about it. Pause before you do it and maybe wait a day or two and be like, oh, I actually do need a cutting board. I'm going to get it. And I've done that before. I've bought things from the recommendation of influencers or celebrities, and I have hated those things and I have loved those things. Advertising is so central to how our economy works. I think that with total moral neutrality, you can buy things and enjoy them. I just think that the goal is to be aware when you are buying something, aware when you are being sold something.
Yeah. And I think that the problem is that a lot of people are absolutely unaware that what Nara Smith is engaging in is a performance.
Right. Totally.
When we think about the way that we can lose ourselves through maybe not consciously engaging in social media and trad wife influencer content, do you believe that engaging in, maybe even enjoying trad wife influencer content is anti-feminist?
Not really, honestly. I don't know. I think that something that I try to remind myself a lot these days is to give myself grace when I'm engaging with these topics. I think that it's impossible to be a perfect feminist and to live in 2024. I know that I personally try to check in on who I'm following every few months and just try to think, like the other day, I just did a little bit of a purge when I realized that I was going to these influencer accounts just to hate myself. I was like, wow, I'm literally just doing this to kind of flagellate. Like, I don't feel good. I just feel jealous. I feel less than, I feel triggered. And we can be addicted to those feelings too.
There's science behind that. I learned that from my therapist.
Yeah, you can be really addicted to these forms of, to be really blunt, self-hatred. And so that is something that you can do. I think it's hard to do in the moment, but if you have a minute and you're about to watch Love is Blind or something, you can be like, who are the accounts that I have been obsessively looking at this week? And it's not that hard for you to think of them because they're addictive and because they're associated with a lot of emotions. So that's what I try to encourage, is just like, try to give yourself a lot of grace in the moment because it is like gambling. It's so addictive that half your brain shuts off when you're on it. And then when you're not looking at the feed, that's when you can make some decisions about how to make small micro adjustments so that you're having like a slightly healthier relationship with your social media.
Awesome. Thank you so much for that. And for folks that want to follow along on your journey, where can they follow you?
Yeah. So I share a lot of these critiques on TikTok at Caro Claire Burke with 3 E's. You can also find me on Instagram, and I am an editor for Katie Kirk Media. So you can find some of my writing there as well.
And that's a wrap on my spicy conversation about trad wife influencers with Caro. I've loved seeing your positive reviews on this season so far, so please keep them coming and tune in next week for another episode. As always, this podcast is produced by Liz Guber and Victoria Christie, edited by Diego Domine. Until next time, keep blooming.